I'm Doris Edmond. I'm from California Lutheran College. I teach curriculum and research in early childhood education in the graduate school there. I'm here doing parenting and courses and lectures on early childhood. And I'm happy you came. It's creativity, how to work creatively with young children. According to the American Heritage Dictionary, creativity is characterized by originality and expressiveness. A creative person is one who is inspired, and imaginative. Of course, you know the word inspire, in effect means guide or to arouse by divine influence. It's actually derived from the word spirit. I like to think of creativity as the spiritual spark given to each person who was created in the Creator's image. Several years ago, I listened to Dr. Dan Jordan from the University of Massachusetts, who was describing his ANISA plan. This was at Atlanta, at the National Association for the Education of Young Children. I went to his lecture, not because I knew anything about the NISA plan or Dan Jordan, but that happened to be where my daughter was, and I thought, I'll see what they're doing in early childhood education. And I was so pleasingly surprised, because he was by far the most fascinating speaker of the entire convention. I had never heard at a national conference of that kind speakers refer to the spiritual side of growth. Or I had, of course, at our church-related school conferences. That's central, of course, with them. But here was a man from a state university who made some rather important statements in my estimation. He said that creativity is inherent in everyone and that the nature of man is perpetual creativity. He also made the statement that creativity is bringing universal potential to actuality. It is a process, not a product. And as we continue to express creativity, it grows. Creativity is a state of becoming. Some people look upon creativity as a talent. I rather think of it as sort of an attitude of mind, the atmosphere in which one grows up, the attitude of the adults around us, the freedom we feel to experiment, to make mistakes, to take risks. All this helps to determine how creative we become. Creativity spans all disciplines. It's not reserved alone for the arts. There is the aha of scientific creativity or discovery. I've seen this kind of creativity even in four-year-olds. You who were here yesterday remember my little story about the boy who accidentally combined blue with yellow and started hollering to the top of his voice, "I've discovered green, I've discovered green." He experienced that aha of creativity. Then there's the ah kind of creativity, the creativity of the artist. And of course, this kind of creativity is very apparent in the young child. We had taken a little spring walk, and the children had admired all the beautiful flowers. And when we got back, we had a chance to do a little painting. And of course, most of the children were painting beautiful gardens, and this one little boy had done a remarkable job, had a lovely, lovely picture. I don't usually make any remarks about the pictures. I just go around, look at them and smile, and if they want to talk about it, they talk about it. If they don't, they don't need to. I went on around and came back to him, and when I got back to him, his whole paper was brown. I didn't say anything, but I'm sure he knew I was wondering what happened to those beautiful flowers. And he looked up at me and he said, "They're behind the wall." There is the creativity of the comic variety, and this is more precious than I think we realize. How often a child with a sense of humor can relieve the tension in a room. But many times this kind of creativity is misunderstood by the teacher, and she takes the attitude that he's trying to be smart. Well, of course, the minute you take that attitude toward any child, he's going to try to be smart. But if you laugh along with him in a natural way and enjoy the spirit of his humor, there won't be any necessity for him to try to act smart. This one little boy was so delightful. His name was Mark. I don't know why such interesting children, little boys, come through with a name like Mark, but I've had a lot of Marks in my day. And this one was particularly remains in my memory because of his humor. I think that he must have lived near his grandparents because he had all these sayings of the 20s, like, "You're not just whistling Dixie," you know. And one time when he was just before Halloween, and one of the little boys said, "What are you going to dress like on Halloween?" He said, "Well, as a ghost, of course. You wouldn't expect me to come like Whistler's mother, would you?" But and then one time he got in a little tussle and he got his eye inadvertently kicked, and he came rushing up to me as close to tears as I ever saw him, and he told me about how he had gotten kicked in the eye, and I said, "Do you think he'll turn black and blue?" And his eyes brightened up, and he said, "Boy, I hope so. You know, I'd rather fight than switch." Of course, that kind of dates that joke, because it was back when we had these commercials on cigarettes. I don't remember which one that belonged to, but that was the phrase. What was it?
Tarrington,
I believe that's right. Whatever kind of creativity we engage in answers a psychic need. And it really releases tension. And I think that it does that, any type of creativity does that for us. We go down in the pot shop and create a pot, no matter how crude, but yet when we come out of there, we feel much more relaxed than when we went in. We go, we sing at the Beanie Sings, we come out of there feeling good and relaxed. The tension is all gone. And we can say that about almost any kind of creativity. It's essentially a thought process through which a new idea is born. The solution of a problem in a new and different way. It is the ability to look at the world and oneself with sensitivity, to perceive problems when others fail to see them, and to examine them with openness from every possible angle. Nowhere does creativity flourish with such sensitivity and spontaneity as it does in young children. The preschooler, with his natural curiosity and extremely physical contacts with the world, brings on untrammeled openness to every experience. Time and social convention have not yet put blinders on him. However, there's some evidence to indicate that what comes naturally to a preschooler may be easily discouraged or lost altogether in the school experience, and that is so sad. This winding down of creativity can start as early as the first grade, when children are urged to get down to business in reading, writing, and math. And even in preschool, you get pressure from parents who say, now, does your nursery school teach them to read? If you promise to do that, they'll send their child to your nursery school. They don't realize what joy there is in learning when the child is ready. And if we try to pressure them before they're ready, it takes the fun out of learning. And many times, for instance, reading, if you try to force this too early, they get a mental block about reading. And it really, they don't ever really get ready to read then, because they have this attitude, this unpleasant attitude toward the whole process. It is difficult for the adult who is guiding the child to provide a creative atmosphere and environment if he, the adult, does not feel free himself to create. We must develop our own imagination if we are to cultivate it in the child we teach. The adult creates the climate of acceptance and appreciation for the child's efforts out of the warmth of his or her own personality and understanding of children. The adult encourages, rejoices, is sensitive, and expresses satisfaction. Dr. E. Paul Torrance says, sizing up a child's creativeness will always be a complex matter. By observing the child at work and at play, you may detect creativity. Here are the key signs to look for. First of all, curiosity. Dr. Joseph Sittler had a definition of curiosity that I think is probably the best I've heard. It's the peculiar joy of the mind. I think it was Dan Jordan who called it a cosmic hunger. The questions are persistent and purposeful, and the child investigates things to see how they feel and smell and work. He experiments with words and ideas. The second sign to look for is flexibility. If one approach fails, he tries something else. He experiments until he finds something that works. Another is sensitivity to problems. He's quick to see exceptions, contradictions, and relationships. Redefinition. He sees hidden meaning and connections. Self-feeling. He works for relatively long periods on his own projects. Following directions do not satisfy him. Originality. He has surprising and uncommon ideas. His painting, his stories, all of this have his own style. He doesn't worry about following a pattern. The next one is insight. He uses his mind and fantasy to get new ideas, often termed ridiculous. And creativity can be encouraged by organizing the environment in a way that will promote a child's interaction with it. We can encourage fantasy. Sometimes we fall down here because we misinterpret fantasy for lying, not telling the truth. I remember it was just before Halloween one year, and a group of children were sitting around the table doing a little Halloween artwork, just sort of free type of coloring and that sort of thing. And, of course, you know, they were all, many of them were drawing jack-o'-lanterns. And this one little boy drew a purple jack-o'-lantern and put some legs on it. And the little boy that sat on one side and said, "You can't do that. There aren't any purple jack-o'-lanterns." And the little girl on the other side said, "Oh, yes, there are. I just saw one walk by the window." And that took care of the legs and everything. Nobody argued with her. They just accepted. Of course, they knew it wasn't true, but they in childlike fashion, they enjoyed the imaginative statement that she made. Now, you might have said, now, Patty, you shouldn't say that. You know there wasn't any purple jack-o'-lantern walking outside the window. Not a single child said that. They just accepted it, and the child who made the purple jack-o'-lantern felt good about himself. We should avoid sexual stereotyping. Don't feel that some activities are only for boys. I remember one mother came in, she said, "Seems like every time I come in here, he's got an apron on." She was very upset. Another thing is not interfering with children's own ideas, even if they overestimate their ability and take risks. Reading and writing are not necessary to creativity. Actions speak too. Help him to use his creativity in getting along with others while still being an individual. Use his sensitivity to be kind. His insight to be understanding. Assertive without being domineering. To work along without being withdrawn. To be honest, but not overcritical. Children who are creative daydream. They fantasize. They're attracted to strangers. They challenge authority figures. They're able to tolerate disorder to a certain extent. And they are very anxious. What kills creativity? Fear of mistakes, over-control, rigid plans, logistics, failure. Observation of children who have been living vitally and fruitfully in well-conceived situations seem to reveal certain essential steps in the creative act. The child must have rich sensory experiences as the basis for any creative expression. He must see, hear, smell, taste, or feel through vivid first-hand sensory impressions. As we were saying yesterday, he must be aware and he must wonder. He must feel deeply. He must react emotionally to his sensory experience. He must feel deeply about what he has experienced. He wishes to share and communicate his experiences to someone else. He has the means available to select an appropriate medium of expression. He learns to subject himself to the disciplines involved in the ultimate successful use of the medium. He must achieve a measure of success. Evaluation is an integral part of the process of expression and creativity. As children grow in their ability to engage in purposeful and creative expression, their power to evaluate increases. Only as children grow and know that they are growing do they receive the stimulation which success brings and feel the inner motivation to seek new experiences and begin again the sequence to creative learning. In this process, children achieve new power to express themselves and raise their standards by critical appraisal of their creative product. The guidance of the adult continues to be the major ingredients in the release of creativity. The adult encourages communication, rejoices in colorful and imaginative expression, and is sensitive to the child's increasingly more discriminating interpretation of experience, and expresses his or her satisfaction in all of these carefully devised and subtle ways. The creative adult contributes to the development of creative people for a world in need of this new unique contribution. The challenge of the changing world must be met by creative people who are adaptable, flexible, creative, innovative, and resilient. All learning is a creative process. Piaget explains it by saying that when a concept is truly learned, the individual uses it in a new and creative way. We constantly see this type of learning in our
very youngest children. I can remember when we picked up our twin granddaughters. They were just two from the LA airport, and we're on our way home. There was a Christmas tree that was lit on the Hollywood Hills, and one of them pointed to it and said, "Oh, look, Mama, there's a triangle." Well, we knew then that she knew what a triangle was because she was using that concept in a new and creative way. She had never seen that Christmas tree up there before. But it's listening to a child's conversation and to what children say, we can tell whether or not they have assimilated a concept by the way they use it in an original way. Of course, one illustration would be when children learn about herbivorous, carnivorous, and omnivorous animals. We talk about looking at their feet. If they have claws, they're the kind of animals that catch other animals, so they eat meat, and meat-eating animals are carnivorous. And same way, the feet of the horse and the cow are hoofed feet. They don't have claws, so they can't catch other animals. They have to confine their diet to growing things such as herbs and weeds and things that grow from the ground. And then, of course, the omnivorous are the kind with paws like we have that eat both the meat and the herbs. So when they go to a zoo, for instance, they can use this knowledge creatively by spotting the different kinds of animals and saying, "Oh, he must eat meat. He has claws." Or, he must have to graze because he has hoofs." And they can see the relationships. Seeing relationships are that's a tremendously important part of learning. Seeing how things relate to each other. That's why the sorting and all that sort of thing is such an important exercise at that early age, because they become discriminating and see how things are alike and how things differ from each other. Then when we need to be aware of the creative way in which he uses language. I like to let a child name things rather than my showing him something and telling him what it is. I like to show him something and say, "What do you suppose this is called?" And you'd be amazed. Sometimes their names are much more appropriate than the given name. For instance, one time we had been studying triangles and squares and circles and things like that, and I showed them a picture. I thought I'd introduce them to the oval. So I had an oval cut out, and I said, "What do you suppose this is called?" And one of them said, "I think it must be a round tangle." And I thought that was a pretty appropriate name. I don't know how many of you know Jack Ledbetter, but he was our poet here, has been our poet a number of years, and he just thought that was the most delightful thing. He put it in one of his poems. Then I know. Remember, speaking of language and its creativity, I told you yesterday about how the little boy, as we traveled through the among the trees early in spring, looked at all the bright green leaves and said, "Oh, their trees are all smiling at us." And here again, a creativity of language. One little boy came in one day on a snowy day, and he said, "I saw a rabbit hopping across the schoolyard so fast that his little feet were just twinkling." I never thought of rabbit's feet being twinkling, but I thought it was very appropriate. And When I had my lab school at Augustana College, Phil Brunel would come down to Iowa City. He directs the opera company now in Minneapolis, but he used to play with the Minneapolis Symphony. The symphony would travel down to Iowa City, which was just 60 miles from where we live, and on one night, and then the next night they would go to Burlington, Iowa, where they would play another concert. So he would come to our house after the Iowa City concert and stay overnight and go with me to my lab school the next morning just to be with those children. It delighted him so, and it was a mutual admiration because Phil would spend the whole morning at the piano with them. First, he'd play for them when they painted. He'd have them dance, and then he'd fit his music to what they were dancing, and then he'd play music, mm-hmm. and they'd fit their dancing to what he played. I'd tell a nursery story, and Phil would embellish it with sound effects on the piano, things like the Three Bears and that sort of thing. And then he'd always conclude with a concert, having the children close their eyes and tell him what they saw while he played. He played one number with his elbows and his arms and the palms of his hands, and it was very weird and dissonant. And I thought, now what are they going to say they saw? And one of the little boys said, well, I saw a man trying to find his way in the dark. And I thought, how appropriate. It sure didn't sound like he knew where he was going. Whenever we had a painting, a session of easel painting, I try to prelude this with different experiences so the children wouldn't come up to the easel with a vacuum, you might say. I tried to do something that would fill their heads with some kind of imaginary pictures. And we'd do it in different ways. Sometimes I would read them a poem. Sometimes we'd sing a song. Sometimes we would pantomime. And one time we pantomimed washing a dog. And we brought this imaginary dog into the house who was very, very dirty. And so we got some imaginary soap, imaginary warm water, and they got busy scrubbing this dog. And they exclaimed, oh boy, he's got big ears. Isn't this a nice big fluffy tail? And what nice soft paws. Well, after they got him well soaped up, we'd pour imaginary warm water to rinse him off and get imaginary towels to dry him. Then we'd take an imaginary rope and tie him out on the porch so he wouldn't roll around in the imaginary dirt. And when we got through, we had a painting lesson. Nothing was said about painting dogs, but you can imagine their heads were so full of dogs, they just had to paint a dog. If I had said we're all going to paint dogs today, you could just hear them. Dogs, I don't know what to paint. I can't paint a dog, you know. Mrs. Edmund, come and help me. I don't know how to paint a dog. I would have gotten that kind of a reaction, I know, by just assigning them to paint something specific. But this way, it just burst out. They had to paint a dog. They were driven to it. One way I feel that we can teach creatively is to be ready to grab onto a specific interest of the moment. For instance, if a child comes in with a turtle, then I think that should be a turtle day. Postpone the plans you made for the day. But in order to make it a turtle day, we have to have pretty good pictures, picture file, idea files, story files, poem files. I'm a kind of a file nut when it comes to teaching, because if I don't know where things are, I can hunt forever to try to find what I'm looking for, especially if I know there's an idea in a book someplace or a song. But if we have a good variety of correlated programs at our fingertips, then we can get busy the minute he brings the turtle in, have a science lesson on turtles, and we can have stories about turtles, we can have turtle songs, we can make paper plate turtles, we can paint turtles, we can have turtle poems, turtle games, and by doing that, we zero in on a concept. Some children learn better by hearing, some seeing, some doing, most of them by doing, of course. And by approaching the turtle from all angles, you can be sure that each child will, in his own way, remember something about turtles. Maybe they won't remember the story, or they won't all remember the poem or the song or the game, but they will remember something that seemed to hit them that particular day. Creativity is richness to share. It begins with our natural human heritage, a wonder, a curiosity about everything in the world. It's probably your youngster's most valuable endowment for living. It is also a most perishable possession. Don't let your child's wonder dwindle and die. Cherish and share it. Help him question and examine and ponder and discover until awareness becomes an essential way, an inseparable part of him. As we were mentioning yesterday, if you have retained some of your childhood wonder, you are his natural partner. But if you literally can't recall being bedazzled by something lovely or intricate or mysterious, at least you are not alone. Your plight is so universal that one person recognized it and described it literally. When raindrops fail to excite you, puddles just become holes. Creativity develops quickly in young children. The thing that starts it is imagination. We see imagination at work, especially during free play periods, for this is when imaginative ideas and behavior are most likely to occur, unbridled by rules, free to leave the real world to soar in the spontaneous world of fantasy. And you see this in action almost in every interest area in your classroom, in the housekeeping corner, where they take on roles of mother and daddy, or maybe a restaurant owner. I can remember one little boy whose parents had a tavern, and he was always running to the telephone and calling the police. And one time, two little girls came into his tavern, this restaurant that he was having there, and he ran to the phone, and he said, Police, I've got a couple of women I want you to come over here and pick up right now. But, you see, he was playing the role of his father in the tavern. And if we watch them when they're playing with blocks, for instance, we see this imagination coming out. One usually takes the lead with directing the activity, and the others are there to do his bidding as a rule. And then in every interest corner, for instance, in the science
corner where you have maybe you have a tub of water and floating objects and sinking objects, just discovering on their own what objects float and what sink is a creative activity. And working with a magnet to find out what contains iron and what doesn't is a creative activity. We have in our lab school at California Lutheran College, we have manipulative bulletin boards with just the height of the child, and things to hang and to match and that sort of thing. And that is a creative activity. In fact, the people in our master's program have published 17 different things the last couple of years to be used in the early childhood programs. And I have a sheet back there. I only have one, but you might look through it and to see the number of things that these girls have developed. One has done a science thing. Another one has done these ideas for manipulative bulletin boards. There is little doubt that creativity can be developed in the classroom. Almost every educational activity that children are involved in can be planned to provide more outlets for their imagination. One day, I had the picture of a kite. Well, it's a kite. It was just the shape of a kite on the bulletin board, and the picture of a little boy holding the string that was attached to the kite, and the kite had a smiling face. And one of the little children came in and said, "Oh, Mrs. Edmund, how come that kite's smiling up there?" And I said, "Well, if you were a kite flying on a beautiful day like this, wouldn't you have a smile on your face?" "Yeah, I think I would." So I said, "Why don't we all be kites now and see how it feels? Close your eyes and just pretend you're soaring up in the sky. And when you come back, you open your eyes. I know you're back then. And you can tell us about your trip." Well, that's just right up a four-year-old's alley, you know. So they closed their eyes, and then one by one they opened them. I said, "Well, who wants to tell me about it?" And one of the little boys volunteered and said, "I saw some birds. I passed some birds up there." I said, "What did you say to the birds?" "I just said, 'Hi, it's a beautiful day to fly.'" And out of that came a little song. "If I were a kite flying through the air, up in the sky so high, passing the birds, I'd whisper hello, it's a beautiful day to fly." We need to grab on to the nice things they say and do something with them. Let them know, "This is good. I like the way you said that." And give them some affirmation for being creative with words. Another little song they helped create was after we had been talking about these herbivorous, carnivorous, and omnivorous animals. And I had some pictures of animals on the board. And one of the little boys came in and said, and this little boy, by the way, came to Holden Village a couple of years ago and was a grown young man. It was so much fun to see him because I remembered him as a four-year-old, a very precocious four-year-old who read ten books a week before he even started our school. But he said, "Now, wouldn't it be funny if an elephant had claws?" I said, "Yeah, it sure would. And what else?" "If a tiger had hoofs." And the little girl sitting right next to him said, "And a pig had paws." I said, "Do you realize what you did? You made up a poem.
Wouldn't it be funny if an elephant had claws, if a tiger had hoofs, and a pig had paws? And we kept saying that until we got a rhythm, and pretty soon we had a song. Wouldn't it be funny if an elephant had claws, if a tiger had hoofs, if a pig had paws? Oh my, oh me, what a mix-up it would be if a squirrel lived in the ocean and a seal lived in a tree. That's the first song in my little Let's Begin with a Song book. But we do need, whether it's our own child at home or whether it's our children in the schoolroom, we do need to give them special recognition for being creative. Because only when we do that will they make an effort to continue this attitude of mind, you might see, this way of thinking. And the following things I'm going to read to you are characteristics of the highly creative child. Many of these things we've had the habit of thinking negatively about, but if we think of them in terms of an attribute of a creative child, then maybe we will look at the child a little differently. The highly creative child tends to be super energetic, playful, and to have a strong sense of humor. He finds it difficult to understand why others don't take steps that he sees as desirable. He often puzzles over things or events that are obvious to others. He usually demonstrates considerable tolerance for disturbance and even conflict. He's willing to risk failure, even setting high standards for himself and his work and choosing the most difficult tasks and goals. He's self-assertive and dominating. He knows he is different, but finds this realization undisturbing. I remember one little boy who said, the kids at school call me weirdo. And today he's one of the world's outstanding oceanographers. He's a graduate of Scripps, extremely brilliant, and is really making a name for himself and doing things for the world. But he was weird. So you see, if that isn't all bad. He very much appreciates beauty. He tends to keep aloof from people, preferring not to bother with close relationships. He's independent, he's resourceful, he's self-sufficient. He may appear lonely or socially isolated, but he doesn't feel that way because the situation is his own choice. He prefers novel approaches, asymmetrical designs, and complex situations. He's insatiably curious. He usually prefers to make judgments by intuition rather than analysis. He tolerates ambiguity well, functioning happily in conditions that lack structure. He's not easily frustrated. He's self-critical, rarely quite satisfied with himself or his work. But on the other hand, he's not easily discouraged. He often indulges in fantasy and creative flights of imagination. He's flexible, shifting easily to meet new situations when required. He often acts in ways that seem immature and overly impulsive. He may feel doubts about his own sex identity because of popular ideas about sexual characteristics, that is, boys, girls should not be independent and boys should not be sensitive. He may show signs of psychological maladjustment, but he can rally inner resources to deal with this maladjustment. He may learn to read or write more slowly than expected because of his many other intellectual interests. The following list may help you check how thoroughly you have learned to nurture creativity. By using colorful vocabulary stretching language in talking with children, choose read aloud material of many different kinds, moods, and vocabularies. Sometimes stop in mid-story and ask, "What do you think happens next?"
make sure that the child learns words that are significant to him and that he can use to express his own feelings. Be patient in encouraging children to express their ideas, no matter how tenuous the thought or hesitant the expression. Help children look at everyday objects and events with a fresh eye. Allow children time to tell you about new experiences in their own way. Furnish places where a child can retire to read, look, experiment, manipulate, contemplate, and dream, and give him time to do it. Provide opportunities for pupils to meet people who are different from themselves. Take students outside the classroom and the school on trips of various natures, durations, and purposes. See to it that the children experience beauty so they may learn to appreciate it and try to emulate it in their self-expression. Introduce children to examples of varied lifestyles, adult occupations, and leisure activities and adult accomplishments. Arrange for children to experience professional productions in art, music, and drama. Furnish activities on several levels of difficulty, letting a child choose his level, but encouraging him to stretch. Stimulate children to engage in experiences in estimating, predicting, measuring, discriminating, and categorizing. Have children express in other media the emotions around by pictures, stories, or music. Do not furnish answers to children, thus robbing them of learning opportunities. Start stories, just suppose that, and let the children stretch their imaginations in interesting and hypothetical situations. One way is fun on this, and that is to talk about the olden days. What do you suppose they did when they didn't have faucets? Where do you suppose they got their water? What do you suppose? This can lead to some very interesting discussions among the children. And then when they find out that maybe you've had some of those experiences, they'll really think you lived in the olden days. Show children how to express themselves in as many ways as possible. Telling and writing stories, playing roles, singing, dancing, painting, and so on. Encourage children to look at situations from viewpoints other than their own. Help children become aware of all their senses. Allow children as much time as possible to follow their own interests. Strike a balance between fantasy and reality in the material you present to pupils. Make time for children to discuss problems that concern them, giving them practice in seeking alternative solutions that are creative. Maintain an inquiring mental attitude. And I think that's important around here. There's so much they can learn. For instance, just suppose that game can be played about the people who lived in Holden Village in the olden days when they had the mine here. What do you suppose that they did for electricity? What do you suppose? How do you suppose they got to town? Or there are so many questions of how the people lived here that would be entirely different from what they live, the way they live down in Chelan, for instance. Maintain an inquiring mental attitude. Provide a psychological climate free from excessive competition, anxiety, and coercion, either physical, social, or emotional. Allow children to venture freely from the safe environment, knowing they can return. Don't profess to know all the answers and demonstrate your willingness to explore possible solutions. Make sure pupils understand that in return for being able to make choices, they must accept responsibility. Try to understand the viewpoint of each child, even when you know he's wrong. Demonstrate that you value children's questions, ideas, and imaginings. Talk to parents about giving children opportunities to explore and create. Recognize that children develop at different rates and sometimes experience periods of stress,
so you do not become anxious. Respect creativity wherever it is found. Do any of you have any stories to share on creativity or things you've tried that have really worked with your children? Any approaches that you'd like to share?
I've got a story.
Okay.
I was teaching Sunday school last year, 4-year-olds, and we were doing a Bible story about somebody taking a journey on a donkey. So around our room, we all got on our donkeys, and we were pretending we were going around the room, going over logs and things. Then it was time to go to our music. So we were going to tie our donkeys up. And one little girl almost burst into tears because someone had stepped on her donkey.
Oh. Oh, dear. Well, that's using imagination. I have to share a little story that one of my students told me. I was teaching summer school at River Forest one summer, and all of the people in my class were teachers from the Chicago area. One of the teachers said that one of her little ones came up with a letter and said, I just got through writing a letter to my mother. Read it. And of course, it was just scribble, scribble, scribble. And so the teacher tried to make up something that she thought that the child had written. She said, that's not what I wrote. So she said, well, you read it to me. He said, you know I can't read. Okay, thanks a lot for coming.